We're going to pick up our study tonight, Ruth chapter 2. Ruth chapter 2, we're doing and continuing this series every third Sunday night, working our way through the book of Ruth. And I'm going to try to be as true to my promise as I can be, in that I want you to turn to Ruth chapter 2. And once you're there, I'm not going to ask you to turn anywhere else. So if you go ahead and be turning there in your Bibles, we will deviate a little bit from the text. However, I'll have those passages on the screen and read through those. So you're going to stay in Ruth chapter 2 if you'll be turning there in your Bibles. You may remember that we left Ruth and Naomi in the city of Bethlehem. And as verse 22 of chapter 1 concludes, we find out that it was at the beginning of barley season. Now, this seemingly insignificant detail is going to have a major impact on the events that occur as we study our way through chapter 2. I want you to notice a couple of things throughout the course of our study. Two things to make note of. First, the author of this narrative is going to constantly remind us that Ruth is a Moabitess. That is, she's an outsider. The reason for that you're going to find revealed for us as we continue through chapter 2 and look at some of the themes that occur throughout that chapter. What's going to essentially happen is that Ruth is slowly going to be introduced into the family of Boaz, and also in being introduced to his family, welcomed into the Israelite family as well. That's going to occur a little bit in chapter 2. Secondly, I want you to watch and see, keep an eye open for God's involvements in the events that transpire. As we've noticed in chapter 1, God is there working behind the scene. And I want you to look for God's involvement. It's not going to be real blatant and real obvious as we work our way through chapter 2. So let's pick up our reading in Ruth chapter 2, beginning in verse 1. Let's start with the first three verses, please. There was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. So Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him in whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." Then she left and she went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. So we see Boaz here really entering the scene. Technically, the narrator is giving us a little bit of background information. He hasn't actually stepped into the forefront of the scene of the book. The author's just providing us with this little bit of information as to who Boaz is. And so, having had no family left in the land of Moab, Naomi decides to return to her hometown of Bethlehem. Now, upon her return, as we just read in verse 1, we're introduced to this man named Boaz, who's not going to arrive on the scene until a little bit later. We find out some important details about Boaz. Verse 1 tells us that he was a man of great wealth. That's the New King James rendering of that verse. What's implied in that description of Boaz in the original language that doesn't always come across in the translation we may be reading is the fact that not only is Boaz a man of great wealth, he's also a man of great status. He's a man of influence in the city of Bethlehem. Secondly, and more importantly, we find out not only is he wealthy and influential, but also that Boaz is a relative of Elimelech, Naomi's late husband. As we look at verse 2, we're told back in chapter 1, as we look at verse 2, we're told that Elimelech was referred to as an Ephrathite. And it's likely that's where Boaz really ties into Elimelech's family. Going back, that is, they were both Ephrathites. And so that's likely how the correlation of the relationship between Boaz and Elimelech would be. And so the nation of Israel, you'll have to understand they were a very family-oriented nation. Remember all of the family responsibilities that are referenced back in chapter 1 of Ruth? Naomi in particular mentions or references the Levirate law, that is, for the man who marries and doesn't have any children, his brother is to take that woman as wife, the widow as wife, and bring up an heir or an offspring for his brother so that his family lineage might continue. And so there were a lot of certain duties that the Israelites were required by law to perform for their extended families. So as we're reading through these first few verses, it's obvious that not a lot of time has passed between chapters 1 and 2. Chapter 1 ends, Ruth and Naomi return to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley season. Chapter 2 begins with this journey home and their arrival in the town of Bethlehem. And you consider this journey that the two ladies would have made, these two widows would have made. It would have been a rigorous journey, and it would have been full of danger. And remember, these are two women that are traveling. Elimelech and Naomi and her two sons traveling to the land of Moab would have been relatively safe. They were in the presence of three men. However, Ruth and Naomi, two widows, are traveling back all alone. And so as soon as they make this rigorous journey back, this risky journey back, they arrive back at Bethlehem. We see Ruth's continued devotion, which was a prevalent theme in chapter 1, toward her mother-in-law, Naomi. As soon as they get back, there's no time for rest. There's no time for recuperation. It's straight back to work in the grain fields. And you may be wondering, as you read through this, how is it that Ruth can find grain fields in which she might work? We may know Naomi probably had some land, or her husband would have had some land before they left Bethlehem. But they haven't been there to tend that land and plant grain and prepare it for a harvest. And so you may wonder what Ruth is requesting when she says, "Let me go to the field and glean heads of grain." Well, you need to understand a principle that was given in the law, a law that was placed by God essentially to provide for the stranger and the widow. And it's found in Leviticus chapter 23 and verse 22. I'm just going to read that passage for you so you can understand Ruth's request a little better. The law said, "When you reap the harvest of your field, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field when you reap, nor shall you gather any gleaning from your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the stranger. I am the Lord your God." So built into God's law was provision for the stranger, for people like Ruth and Naomi, people who were too poor to afford food. So those who did not have could walk behind the reapers in the field, and they could pick up the excess that might have been dropped or come loose. Consider, the author on several occasions throughout this text reminds us Ruth is a Moabitess. She's an outsider. She's not a daughter of Israel. And in doing so, by making this request to go and to reap in the fields of grain of someone else, she's really placing herself in a very precarious position. What if she goes to the field of a person who isn't kind? The landowner is harsh and is aggressive and is selfish. What if she were to be abused and taken advantage of, being an outsider, being a Moabitess? Not only that, but you consider gleaning fields was not exactly going to provide one with just an abundance of grain. Kind of the picture there of someone who's gleaning in a field or reaping in a field. The reaper, the person with the field, would hire both men and women to work and to harvest their grain or their barley. And what would happen? The men would have a specific role. They would be the reaper. They would have a scythe in their hand, and they would go up and grasp the grain with their left hand. And then they'd take the scythe or the sickle, and they would cut it with their right hand, taking those heads of grain, separating it from the wheat itself, the stalk. And then they would carry that in their arms until it got full, which they would then lay the grain down on the ground. Now the women would be trailing behind the male reapers, and then once the men would lay down these sheaves of grain, the women would take and bind them up into bundles, and that would produce what we know as a sheaf of grain. We sing that song, "Bringing in the Sheaves." That's what we're talking about bringing in. And so, taking care to be as efficient as possible, these reapers were going to hold on to as much of the grain as they can and not dropping very much for the gleaners. And so, there wasn't going to be just a whole lot for the gleaners to pick up who were working behind the reapers and the young women. You might equate essentially what Ruth was trying to do as a person who's trying to make enough money for a meal by picking up aluminum cans on the side of the road. You can pick up hundreds and hundreds of cans and only end up with a few dollars. And so that's a similar event or similar circumstance that Ruth finds herself in. And as you're reading through this, you can't help but notice the language that's used in verse 3. As you're reading through verse 3 again, you see that as Ruth gets permission from Naomi to go and to reap and glean in the field, she leaves and she gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz. And as the language in verse 3 kind of makes it sound, all of this seems to happen by chance. She happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz. And as you read through this sentence, the narrator's making it sound as if this just happened by chance. It just so ended up that Ruth finds herself in a field belonging to Boaz, who he's introduced as kin to Naomi. It becomes quite obvious, however, that this sentence was intended to be hyperbolic. That is, it wasn't intended to be taken literally. I told you before to be on the lookout for God's involvement in chapter 2. And I think it's quite obvious that God is very subtly at work here. The author makes it sound like it's just by chance, but I think he's really pointing to the fact that God is behind the scenes working in the life of Ruth and Naomi and of Boaz. You go back to chapter 1, a couple of instances where you see God not at the forefront. He's not been silent in the story, but neither has he there been on the forefront. Back in verse 6 of chapter 1, remember, it was said that God had visited his people by giving them bread. And so God was working behind the scene through the laws of nature to once again bring rain and growth to the land, to the people. And as a result of God's restored blessings upon them, they were able to plant and grow and harvest and produce bread for themselves. You may remember a couple of statements that Naomi made too, referencing God's involvement in her life. She says, "The hand of the Lord has gone out against me," back in chapter 1 and in verse 13. Now verse 3 tells us that Ruth went and gleaned in this field after the reapers. This is somewhat of a summary statement. Verses 4 through 16 are going to transpire before this process of gleaning actually begins. So as you're reading through this verse and you come across this passage here, you realize although the author makes it sound as if it were just a chance meeting, what you actually see is God's hidden providential hand behind this meeting. So let's continue on reading through this text, reading through the story of chapter 2, picking up our reading in verse 4. "Behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, 'The Lord be with you.' And they answered him and said, 'The Lord bless you.' Then Boaz said to his servants who were in charge of the reapers, 'Whose young woman is this?' So the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered and said, 'It's the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. And she said, "Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." So she came and has continued from morning until now, though she rested a little in the house." And so as you are at first introduced to Boaz, as he first comes onto the scene, he comes to this field probably to check on the progress of the harvest that's taking place. And as he greets his reapers, he says, you know, as we greet one another, we have common greetings. We might say to someone, "Good morning," or "How are you doing?" The common Jewish greeting was "Shalom," which is translated "Peace to you." However, Boaz greets his reapers this morning by saying, "The Lord be with you." And so on the surface, we may take this phrase and say, well, I'll attribute that to Boaz as piety. Now, we're going to find out that he is indeed a very man full of valor and piety. However, not solely based off that he simply greets his reapers in this way. By wishing them God's blessings, these men are out reaping his field, and so no doubt he might hope that they would be blessed by God, that Yahweh would truly be with them as they're reaping, and that God in turn might bless them, in him, you might say, with a bountiful harvest. And so this book's very well written, and the language it's used in chapter 2 makes it sound like a chance that Boaz and Ruth just happened to meet up at this field by coincidence. And it's just in this brief window of time that while Ruth is there waiting to reap, Boaz happens to show up. But verse 4 makes it clear, "The Lord be with you," that God might be off stage, but he's there within an earshot. He's working to bring about this meeting. And upon closer inspection, Boaz takes note of Ruth, and he inquires of his foreman about her. Now, this is really interesting. I think we probably all have a perception of Ruth as we read through this book, and maybe I have a tendency to think of Ruth to kind of be a woman who's somewhat quiet and shy, and she keeps to herself. But the request that she makes that we just read in verses 4 through 7 actually portrays a different side of Ruth that I don't oftentimes attribute to her. And she seems very bold and brash in this request that she makes. So Boaz recognizes this woman standing here. He knows it's not one of his young women that he's hired to work in his field. And so he asks his foreman who this woman is. Once again, I told you, you're going to see the author here note time and again Ruth's status of being an outsider. Boaz asks the foreman, "Who is this woman?" And the foreman replies, "She's the Moabitess that came back with Naomi from the land of Moab." So once again, he's bringing that to the forefront. Ruth's an outsider. She's a Moabitess. And as it turns out, Ruth made this request of the foreman, and he wasn't really sure how to answer. Now, normally the gleaning process, what Ruth was seeking to do, would be walking behind the reapers, and any grain that they may have missed or any grain that was dropped in this process of reaping, the gleaners would then be able to pick up so that they might produce a very meager amount of grain. But did you notice Ruth's request? wasn't just to glean in the fields as would have normally been done. She says there, "Please let me glean and gather after the reaper along the sheaves." Her request wasn't just to go and gather what was left standing, but to gather from the sheaves that the reapers would have left waiting to be tied by the women. Now, her persistence was such that she's waiting there, it says, for a long time, since early morning, waiting for an answer. It appears the foreman doesn't really know how to respond to this absurd request. You know, it's very possible that Ruth realizes she's simply not going to be able to gain enough grain to supply herself and Naomi with food. And so she recognizes this prior commitment she made. And once again, you see Ruth's love for Naomi and that she goes above and beyond in making this request above what God essentially commanded the children of Israel to do. And as she goes and as she makes this request, the foreman doesn't know how to answer. Chance just throws Boaz and Ruth together. And you're left wondering, how's Boaz going to respond to this absurd request? To this foreigner? Is he going to be kind? Is he going to be generous? Or is he going to be cruel and is he going to be miserly and is he going to shy away from her because she's not an Israelite? Well, let's look at Boaz's response to this very bold request that Ruth makes of him. Picking up our reading in verse 8. Boaz said to Ruth, "You'll listen, my daughter, will you not? Do not go to glean in another field, nor go from here, but stay close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap and go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have gathered." And she fell on her face, bowed down to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes, and that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" And Boaz said to her, "It has been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you've left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and have come to a people whom you did not know before. The Lord repay your work, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." Then she said, "Let me find favor in your sight, my lord, for you have comforted me and have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants." So we see Boaz's response. He's very generous in how he responds to this very bold request that Ruth makes. And it's interesting to note, you know, I think we have a tendency, once again, kind of to picture in our mind various things, and maybe it's Hollywood's influence on our life. I've always kind of pictured Ruth and Boaz to both be young people, young, good-looking individuals that happen to meet each other and fall in love and get married and have a family. But Boaz, reading the actual account so oftentimes does, brings us back down to the reality of the situation and portrays for us accurately the differences between these two individuals and how our imagination might paint these events. Boaz addresses Ruth here in verse 8, did you hear how? As his daughter. Now who else have we heard speak to Ruth using that same terminology? Naomi has. Naomi speaks to Ruth frequently and refers to her as her daughter. So the reality is, Boaz is probably an older man. In fact, it's guessed that he is probably a contemporary around the age of Naomi. And he speaks to Ruth very tenderly, as you might expect a father to speak to his daughter. In the original language, he implores her, he speaks to her in very strong language, telling her that she needs to stay and glean in his field, and then he encourages her to stick close to his young women. Now remember, Boaz would have hired both young men and young women for this process of reaping his field. The young men would cut the grain and they would lay it in bundles. The young women would come along after them and tie it up. And so Boaz's command was for Ruth to stay with the young women. This is a very important detail. Now, I've entitled this sermon, "Welcome to the Family," because I believe that this is a major theme that's played out in Ruth chapter 2. This book reiterates time and time again, Ruth is an outsider. She's a Moabitess. Yet in verse 8, what you see Boaz doing is granting her some sort of status by having her glean, not with all of the other gleaners perhaps that might be seeking to eke out just a little bit of grain for them to eat, but he's granting her some sort of status by having her glean in the field with his young women. And by gleaning with these young women, Ruth's going to be in front of all of the other gleaners, meaning her result was very much likely going to be better. Not only that, but his generosity goes above and beyond gleaning with his young women, his young female workers. He says, if you get thirsty, then you can drink some of the water that the young men have drawn. Now, this is a very unexpected but welcome concession. I know a lot of our members out here, you can probably relate to the effect of the sun beating down on your head while you're out working in the field. In fact, I spent a couple of summers myself during my high school years working in soybean fields and in cotton fields and in corn fields. And so I know the effect of the sun that just beats down on you and saps your strength. And to be able to work semi-efficiently throughout a hot summer day with the sun beating down on your head, it's very important that you stay hydrated. Normally what the gleaners would have to do is they would have to break from their gleaning. They would have to go to the well, probably back in the town of Bethlehem. They'd have to draw the water from the well. They would have to drink, and then upon drinking and restoring their energy, they would then go back to the field and continue gleaning. Now the advantage Ruth will have here, not only is she not going to have to go and draw water from herself, she'll be able to drink freely from the water that the young men have drawn. Normally, this would be a task that would be delegated to young women or to foreigners to draw water to provide for the workers. However, Boaz says, Ruth, if you get thirsty, you can go drink from the water that my young men have drawn. And so what we have here is this foreign woman who's allowed to drink water drawn by the Israelite men. Kind of an interesting turn of events there. Another interesting motif that really manifests itself right here that we probably don't realize as we read through this story is God's protection of chosen women. Boaz continues to heap generosity upon Ruth. Ruth's in a very precarious position. She's a young foreign woman, alone, and if she stumbled into a field, she's very vulnerable. She stumbled into the field of a cruel man, who knows what might happen. But Boaz makes statements in verses 8 and 9 where he says to Ruth, don't glean in another field. I've commanded my young men not to touch you. Ruth is being protected by Boaz. Now, this is a motif that's been demonstrated frequently among the wives of the patriarchs. And I tell you, as the Israelites read this, this is really going to resonate strongly in their minds. See, it's going to call to mind God's protection of chosen wives in the lineage of Jesus. You'll remember Sarah and Rebecca. Both of these women received protection from God because God wanted to preserve and He wanted to be sure that beyond any shadow of a doubt, the lineage of Abraham and Sarah, that she was with no other men. And you'll remember when Abraham and Sarah go to the land of Gerar, where you've got King Abimelech there, and Abraham tells that little half-truth, Sarah's my sister. King of Abimelech takes her and adds Sarah to his harem. And then God's divine protection intervenes in such that the people are struck with the disease. And he comes and he visits Abimelech in a dream and he says, you don't lay a hand on this woman. He's seeking to preserve the purity of Sarah's relationship with Abraham so that there can be no doubt who this promised child will belong to. This promised child that's eventually going to bring forth the Savior, that is His Son. Romans 9, it really enumerates that this is God's plan, that Jesus Christ be brought forth from the lineage of Abraham, from the lineage of David. And so you see God's divine protection in the life of Abraham and Sarah. Not only that, you see God's divine protection in Rebekah as well. You know, Isaac takes Rebekah as wife. He goes to the same land, probably encounters Abimelech's son, and the exact same thing kind of plays forth there, where Rebekah is taken and added to the harem of the king's son. And once again, God steps in and intervenes because He wants to preserve the purity of the relationship of Isaac and Rebekah, just as He did with Abraham and Sarah. And so you see God's divine intervention in protecting these chosen women that were going to be in the lineage of Jesus. Now, in this case here, as we're going to find out, and as chapter 4 concludes with a short genealogy, what we find out is that Ruth is in the lineage of David. That's his great-grandmother, who is also in the lineage of Jesus. And so you've got this motif. Boaz, in a sense, is providing protection for Ruth from anything that might happen to her. He's commanded his young men not to touch her. He says, I don't want you to go and reap in any other man's field. In a sense, God's providing protection for Ruth because she was going to be one of the ones in the lineage of Jesus Christ. And so perhaps you see, once again, God protecting her, just as he had other patriarchal wives, such as Sarah and Rebecca. And also, as you read through this passage here, you find out what goes around comes around. What was Boaz's motive? Why was it that he demonstrated and just heaped out this generosity on Ruth? Was it perhaps that he was interested romantically in her at this point? Or is this the way that he normally treated every gleaner? I would suggest to you that there's more here than meets the eye, that Boaz didn't just treat every person who gleaned in his field with this same amount of generosity. Did maybe he feel a little bit of an obligation to protect her because he finds out that he's related to her in a roundabout way? Boaz has shown Ruth unexpected favor. What motivated him to make all of those concessions? I think the answer is given for us in verse 11. We see a little insight as to Boaz's extreme kindness. When he speaks to Ruth, he answers and he says, "It's been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law." See, word had gotten around. Bethlehem, remember, was a relatively small town. Its population estimated to be from 150 to 200 people. Remember, everyone knew Naomi whenever she came back after having been gone over 10 years. And so, word had gotten around in this small community, in this city, about Ruth the Moabitess. And Naomi's story had been told as she had returned from the land of Moab. She brought back with her this foreigner, Ruth. And it was out of love for Naomi that Ruth had left her home and returned with her mother-in-law. And word had gotten out, and people had known why Ruth was there and how it came to be Naomi didn't come back alone. And I tell you, this would have really resonated with the Israelite readers. We read this, and we really don't think about the history of the patriarchs that they would be all too familiar with. This idea about an individual being called away from their home to leave the comforts and the stability of one's home, which is essentially what Ruth did, that would resonate with them because that would call to mind the migration of their patriarchal ancestors. Abraham. Remember the call of Abraham? God says, "I want you to leave your home, I want you to take your family, and I want you to go to a land that I'm going to show you." He's leaving for an unknown land. And Jacob wandered about as sojourners and as pilgrims. So this would have really resonated with them, how Ruth left everything behind, her family, her comforts, what was well known to her, where she would have been stable. She left that all behind to go to this place with her mother-in-law that she had no idea what she might experience. And so, in a sense, Boaz's kindness reciprocated the kindness that Ruth showed to Naomi. But at the same time, Boaz recognized he had only shown marginal kindness in regard to the true sacrifice that Ruth had made for her mother-in-law. And so what Boaz goes to do, he goes to place Ruth's debt in the hands of God to further repay this kindness. He realizes he perhaps can make a small down payment on what God intends to truly bring about as her full payment. And so he says there in verse 11, "May the Lord fully repay you for what you've done, your work, and may a full reward be given to you by the Lord God of Israel." So let's continue in our reading a little bit as we're going to see a change of scene take place. Beginning in verse 14, let's read the next few verses. "Boaz said to her at mealtime, 'Come here and eat the bread. Dip your piece of bread in vinegar.' So she sat by the reapers and he passed parched grain to her, and she ate and was satisfied and kept some back. And when she rose up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, 'Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. Also let her glean from the bundles, also let grain from the bundles fall purposely for her. Leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her.'" In verses 13 and 14, we have here the passing of time. This conversation between Ruth and Boaz comes to an end, and Boaz has lunch prepared. And what you find out, once again, the kindness of Boaz is not only is demonstrated and extended to Ruth in that he invites her to join this meal. So we see an additional kindness being shown to Ruth on behalf of Boaz, not only providing her a special place among the reapers, the young women, not only allowing her to drink the water drawn by his young men, but then by extending an invitation to come and eat a meal. The fact that she sat among the reapers is no small detail. It indicates, once again, she's been given this status. She's being welcomed further into this Israelite
family. Not only does Boaz provide her a meal, she's able to eat to her fill, and we're told that she has some left over. Eager, however, to begin her gleaning, Ruth leaves the meal. Upon leaving, Boaz gives his young men further instruction. And what we see really here is Boaz going beyond the law. He instructs his reapers to allow Ruth to glean between the sheaves without reproach. Normally, a reaper would be very protective of their master's harvest. They wouldn't allow the gleaners to get near the sheaves. However, Ruth was given special permission from Boaz. And his generosity goes even a step beyond allowing her to glean among the sheaves. He commands his reapers to intentionally drop some of the grain that they've harvested and allow her to pick it up. This went far beyond the law that Moses gave the people. Remember, the law was simply that they not reap the corners of the field and that they not stop to pick up anything that they may inadvertently drop in this process of reaping. And given Boaz's statement back in verse 12 where he says, "The Lord repay your work," the reader of this text wonders, is this generosity that Boaz is showing simply a down payment that's foreshadowing God's full payment that he's going to make? And more importantly, perhaps, is Boaz going to emerge as the instrument through which God repays Ruth's kindness most fully? Let's continue and conclude our reading, beginning in chapter 2, verse 17, and we'll read through verse 23, the end of the text. "As she gleaned in the field until evening, she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. She took it up, and she went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. So she brought out and gave to her what had been kept back after she had been satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, 'Where have you gleaned today? And where did you work? Blessed be the one who took notice of you.' So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, 'The man's name with whom I have worked today is Boaz.' Then Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, 'Blessed be he of the Lord who has not forsaken his kinsmen to the living and the dead.' And Naomi said to her, 'This man is a relation of ours and one of our close relatives.' Ruth the Moabitess said, 'He also said to me, You shall stay close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest.' And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, 'It's good, my daughter, that you go out with the young women and the people, that people do not meet you in any other field.' So she stayed close by the young women of Boaz to glean until the end of barley harvest and wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law." So verse 17 kind of closes out the scene in the fields of Boaz. After having spent a large portion of the morning waiting for Boaz to return to find out if she could reap among the sheaves, meeting Boaz, having this conversation, and then eating with him, Ruth's finally able to do what it is she set out to do. And so after separating the husk from the kernels, we're told that Ruth has collected about an ephah of barley to take back to Naomi. Now, to save you a lot of dry calculations and conversions, an ephah of barley turns out to be about 29 pounds of grain. The fact that Ruth was able to glean that much, after a day's reaping really speaks of Boaz's generosity and her own industry. To really put this in perspective, the rations of a male worker around this time period would have been about 1 to 2 pounds of grain per day. And so Ruth was able to collect almost one half of a month's wages in one day. Verses 12 and verse 17 make strong implication that God was really paying back Ruth for her kindness that she has shown to Naomi. Verse 12, where Boaz once again makes that statement, "The Lord repay your works, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord God." And then as we find out that indeed God has blessed Ruth's kindness by providing her with this extensive amount of grain after a day gleaning in the fields, 29 pounds worth of grain. However, we're left to wonder, in what way is God going to fully repay her kindness? And so Ruth returns to the city of Bethlehem after gleaning in the fields. She goes back to her mother-in-law, Naomi. Naomi was in for quite a surprise. Back in verse 14, we're told that Ruth had an excess amount of food. She ate to her fill and she had some left over. We're not told what she did with it, however. You might suspect that after a day's hard reaping in the field and gleaning, she might eat her meal upon returning back to the city of Bethlehem. But if you know Ruth, and you see her character really shown back in chapter 1, she has this loyalty and love for her mother-in-law. Ruth didn't eat that leftover food. She took it back to Naomi, and who knows how long it's been since Naomi's last eaten a meal. She takes that food back to Naomi that Boaz had given her. She gives that to her mother-in-law. Once again, kindness is shown from Ruth toward her mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. And upon hearing that it was Boaz, you can really see the gears turning in Naomi's mind. She blesses Boaz, who's shown Ruth such kindness. It seems that she might have more in mind than grain and food that Ruth brought back. Naomi here really makes the first positive statement toward God. In the past, she's complained in chapter 1, the Lord's hand had gone out against her. The Lord had testified against her. But now she blesses him for the kindness that he has shown both to the living and to the dead. At this moment, Naomi is heirless. That is, she does not have a son. She has no male in her lineage that can continue her family line. However, you no doubt can see these wheels turning. If Ruth and Boaz were to marry, then an heir would be produced in the name of her dead son. Her family might continue to exist. And so for the first time, she mentions to Ruth that Boaz happens to be a relative of hers. The role that Naomi expects Boaz to step into is that of kinsman redeemer. And since Naomi has no living husband or male children, there were certain duties that fell to what is called the kinsman redeemer. Now, under the old law, and you just hang out right here, I'll read these, and if you're interested, I can provide you the citation for the passages. But the kinsman redeemer had a responsibility toward his family. Number one, he was responsible for the repurchase of property that was once owned by a family member. If an individual got into such dire straits that they had to sell their land was their blessing, it was their inheritance from God. And the way that it worked, the land stayed in the family for all time. But if an individual had to essentially lease their land for a period of time until it was returned to them in the year of Jubilee, then the kinsman redeemer was responsible for seeing that that land was returned. And if he had to purchase that land back so that it could be restored to his family, then he would be the one that was responsible for taking care of that duty. Secondly, he would redeem an individual whose poverty might have forced them into selling themselves into slavery. And so if things got so desperate that they sold their land and they had to sell themselves into slavery so that they might continue to live, it was the responsibility of the kinsman redeemer to buy that person back and restore their freedom. He also had to act as the avenger of blood. If an individual was murdered in cold blood, then the kinsman redeemer would step into that role of avenger of blood, and he would be responsible for tracking down and executing the killer. The kinsman redeemer would also be the recipient of money paid as restitution. If, for instance, an individual was to be paid a debt but they died, then the kinsman redeemer would be the one that would receive restitution on behalf of the one who died so that the debt could be paid. And lastly, any injustice that was really committed against a family member, he was to see that justice was brought, that justice was accomplished. And so you see here, any disruption of the familial unit under the old law, as the Israelites lived, any disruption of the familial unit was a breach that had to be repaired. Whether it was property, whether it was a person, redemption, buying back, constituted the restitution or the restoration of a familial wholeness. And this was the role that largely fell in part to the kinsman redeemer. He was to be the one who had to make things right, who had to restore that which had been broken, and to bring things whole, make things whole once again. And so this idea of kinsman redeemer is going to come forth in chapters 3 and 4, and going to dictate the events and the conclusion of this story. Naomi is left wondering, in what way is Boaz going to fulfill that role? You see really a reversal of fortune. The end of this chapter shows a complete change of events in the life of Naomi. At the end of chapter 1, she's without food and she's without family. But now, chapter 2, she has food and a gracious benefactor to look after her. And so the reader's left wondering, might she also receive the son that was taken away from her as well? And it's obvious where Naomi's mind is going. Her words to Ruth in verse 22 indicate she doesn't want Ruth to continue reaping in anyone else's fields, rather to reap only in the fields of Boaz. Boaz says, stay with my young men. Naomi says, you stay with the young women. She has a match for Ruth in mind. And it's not any of the young men that might be working in Boaz's field. We're going to find out more about that in chapter 3. And so yet, despite setting forth all of these efforts and this chance meeting that occurred, and Boaz extending this kindness to Ruth, and finding out he's the kinsman redeemer, the end of chapter 2 really concludes with a letdown for the reader. You're left wondering, you're left in suspense, how is Ruth going to receive that full reward from the Lord that Boaz has begun to make this down payment on? And you may think, well, with this additional time spent in harvesting the grain and working in Boaz's field, and maybe more of these encounters like we've witnessed in this chapter, more of a relationship will kind of come forth as a result of that. But chapter 2 and verse 23 just kind of ends with a letdown. We find out Ruth gleans until the end of barley harvest and wheat harvest, and then she returns to live with her mother-in-law. And that's how the chapter concludes. So let's take a few moments, and we'll pick up our study next month in chapter 3. Let's take a few moments just to look at a couple of applications that we can make in the story regarding us. Firstly, I want us to realize the Lord repays chesed. Chesed is the Hebrew word for kindness. You go back to chapter 1. That's the Hebrew word used to describe the kindness that Ruth showed to Naomi. The Lord repays that kindness. And the author of this book strongly hints toward the fact that it's because of her kindness toward Naomi that God is in turn repaying that debt. Now we understand in a very real sense, God owes Ruth nothing. However, he has witnessed this kindness to Naomi. He's stepping in. He's taking the burden of that debt. He's going to be the one to make sure it's paid back. We understand that our goodness by no means indebts God to us. But it's a principle that we see clearly throughout the Bible over and over. We reap what we sow. We have this saying among us, no good deed goes unpunished, right? However, I believe the more accurate saying might be this, no good deed goes unseen. God watches. He sees. He saw the kindness Ruth has shown Naomi, and he's only begun to really pay her back for the kindness she has shown. We'll do well to remember that, that God witnesses our kindness, and that he might very well reward us for some of that as well. If not in this life, definitely in the life to come. At the same time, let this serve as a warning to those that aren't kind, to those who hold back and are selfish. God sees that as well. We're going to reap what it is we sow. We need to be careful that we sow like root seeds of kindness in our life. And secondly, as this chapter concluded, the reader's left somewhat deflated. We're not told Ruth's thoughts on this. Maybe she had expectations in her mind that things with Boaz were going to work out at a slightly different pace. But rather, we find out at the end of harvesting season, Ruth just simply returns home and dwells with her mother-in-law. Perhaps she might have different expectations, that Boaz might more willingly step into this role of the kinsman redeemer and make more obvious efforts to help the family. But that's not what we see. If she doubted what Naomi had hoped would happen, we're not told that to be the case. However, God has plans for Ruth, and it's not going to be necessarily in her time that these are fulfilled. We can all attest, God's time does not always coincide with ours. He's going to bless Ruth, but it's going to be in the time that he sets forth. In this book of Ruth, we really see God's goodness and his involvement in the life of his people. We see God's heart on full display in that he is providing whatever it is his children need. And as we consider God working throughout this book, here in chapter 2 especially, we see this is who God is at his core, at his very being. His kindness and his generosity is manifested fully for us in the work of Jesus Christ. We stood in need of reconciliation and forgiveness. And that's exactly what it is that Jesus provides for us. And so if you're here this evening and you have need of the reconciliation and the forgiveness that God provides us through Jesus Christ, you can take advantage of that by coming in obedience and in faith, being baptized and washing away your sin. You can be added to the family of God, as we find out in Acts chapter 2, occurs to those who obey the gospel. That opportunity is made available for you at this time.